we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South, Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense, Colt-centric, talking about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Do it big.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. We got a few things to talk about tonight. Not a ton Colts related specifically, but we are going to do a three-round mock draft. Let's mix it up a little bit. We'll do that because some of you guys were asking after we did the mock the other night that you guys were kind of interested in seeing who was there somewhere in the second round and so on and so forth. So after we talk about some of these new rule changes here in the NFL, we'll go ahead and kind of run through a three-round mock, and I'll go through that with you guys. All so that we can all kind of see, you know, who was on the board, so on and so forth, with everything that that comes through and who's available and all that good stuff. But let's talk about these catch rules. They were implemented just recently. There's several of them that were adopted. Kick rule, the 25-yard line touchback was made official. That's no longer, you know, in the whatever phase that they call that, like temporary phase or whatever, to where they could kind of scout it and see how it worked. But they liked it. It made sense. They're trying to lower the concussion rates and such. So they adopted that for good. That's, like I said, no longer temporary. But let's talk about a few of these that were, you know, brought forth, you know, mainly because the original rules kind of sucked and led so much to be misunderstood, and it was really difficult to follow what one referee was going to do from another. The big one, of course, was the catch rule. Now, I think that you have a lot of different ways that you could call it a catch, and I just think that these guys had missed it for so long on how to actually do it. The requirement to, what do they say, they call it to survive the ground. They say it's been eliminated, and it was designed specifically to avoid more instances of basically arguments over calls. Now, here's the thing. For me, my opinion is that survive the ground is still going to be somewhere in there implemented, because we saw with Jesse James, his catch where he leaned into the end zone, basically goes down to his knee, turns his body, and reaches for the end zone, and they call it, you know, whatever. And then we have, of course, the Calvin Johnson catch, no catch type stuff, and then, you know, of course, the Dez Bryant part of it. So I understand that, but there is still going to be some piece of survive the ground. For example, I think that when you look at Calvin Johnson's catch, if you remember, he catches the ball, he's going down into the end zone, he has the ball in one hand, kind of leaning it back to catch himself on the ground, and the ball comes out. Obviously, I think most of you remember that, but if you didn't, that was what basically happened. And the part where the ball comes loose there, I think that's different from, for example, even the Dez catch, where Dez clearly has control of the ball with his hands and is trying to dive for the end zone as well, and they call that a no catch. I think that's a different thing, because I think Johnson, he had already caught the ball, was going down to the ground, the ball comes out. I just think they're different. I think that they're both catches, but I just think that they're totally different situations about that, right? So if it's a situation where a guy is being hit and he goes down like Calvin Johnson did, say Calvin Johnson catches the ball, somebody else hits him, and he goes down like that, I think you're still going to have the ball secured the entire time, because the ground can't really cause the fumble, first of all. We understand that. But I just think that it works out better that way. If there's some sort of a contested piece of the catch, of the touchdown catch, I think you have to make that receiver survive the ground. I think that's a legitimate requirement for it. Now, the problem is that you have all these different situations come up, and each referee is calling it different, okay? So here's basically what they've done. Now the receiver must control the ball, establish himself in bounds, and perform a football move such as a third step, a lunge, to make a legal catch. Okay. So the lunge, that's the part where they're reaching for the end zone. That makes sense, right? That's clearly a move after possession. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. A third step, Okay, but that's, you know, they're going to start doing this where guys catch it with 2 feet down, and or just, you know, then they're going to have to slow motion to see which foot, if both feet hit exactly at the same time, or if 2 feet hit different times, that's going to be one and two steps, or is that just one step? It's just going to be stupid. They're just going to make more issues out of this. I don't care. Just understand that if they catch the ball, what did it look like live, and then go, how did you call it? Go back and look. If it's not absolutely obvious that the person didn't catch it, you can't overturn it. I mean, just or anything like that. I think that they just have to be commonsensical about it, and then everything else will turn out fine, to be quite honest with you. I just think that this is going to just raise new questions, though. I don't think that it's bad that they've done something with it, because something needed to be done. There's no doubt about it. I just think that they could, you know, possibly have added a little bit more clarity as well. The 15-yard penalty for lowering their head to initiate to make contact with the helmet. This is kind of another situation where how is the referee supposed to call this? I mean, running backs, quarterbacks, everybody's on the board for this one, right? It's not just defenders. I just think it's going to cause a lot of confusion. And there's a bunch of different articles up on these that kind of run through them, and we'll kind of lay them out for you as well, and you can kind of get some different points of view on it. Because they're all good articles, because these are, you know, a couple of these, especially these last two, are pretty new. I mean, you know, so I mean, it definitely is not something that we see every year. We do see a bunch of rule changes, but these kind of seem to be, you know, kind of serious. I don't think that too many people took notice to the 25-yard touchback rule, because I think that that's lowering concussions out they want to do. We're going to talk about more of that pretty soon, as far as them trying to take kickers out. What's that do for special teams guys? You know, that's a whole nother ball of wax as well. It makes sense. At the same time, you've got to find something, in my opinion, to take its place, though. So let's get back on the 15-yard penalty before I get completely off of the on the wrong end here. Basically, if whether it's a defender or an offensive player leading with the head. Now, here's the thing. You have offensive linemen that do it every single play, every snap. Quarterbacks lower their head to get under tackles. Guys, targets change by 6 to 12 inches in the blink of an eye. So leading with your helmet I just think that you have to have your eyes to the ground and intentionally leading with not just the forehead, the face mask here. That's ridiculous. That's a heads up. That's you're seeing what you're hitting there, right? Good tackles should not be penalized. Let me put it that way. If you run into somebody, two of you run as fast as you can and you run into somebody, you don't hit heads, your heads don't hit anything. Obviously, this is a really sporadic for instance here, but if that was the case, you didn't hit heads and your head didn't hit anything. The simple fact of the pressure and the impact of you two hitting each other would give you a concussion, more than likely. I just don't want to see good tackles being penalized. I understand that they have to keep the people from trying to take others out with their helmet. That's understandable. On the other hand, you've got to be smart about it. It can't be, you know, the officials don't know how to call this either. Mike Pereira was talking about it even and said that he didn't, really get how the officials were going to be able to do it. Said basically that it's just leading them down the wrong road. Like, they're going to have to continually be trying to guess at how to make this call right. This is basically the catch rule call 2 years ago or last year even, you know, or 3 years ago, where there's nothing but questions about it all the time. And they've done this. I understand what they're trying to do, but I also think that they should understand that you shouldn't just come forward with a rule if you don't have a really good grasp on how both you want to implement it, who's getting ejected, because they can do that now. Not only that, another part of this is video, or not video on the sideline, but that is one. But the other part of this is that they want the guys in New York and the ones helping the umpires and referees and sideline judges and all them with their calls on challenges and so forth, they want to be able to help be able to eject players, you know. And it's, I think that they said for this one is non-football rules, like two guys getting a fight, something like that, referee doesn't see it, they want to be able to eject those players, ring them down, and tell them, you know, those guys got to go. And I think that's great. I think that's fine. That I don't know why that would be an issue. That's simply just eyes that those people on the field simply didn't have in the back of their head. These guys are going to help them out with that. I think that's fine. But on the other hand, you know, you've got this piece of 15-yard penalty stuff here. How's that going to play? I think it's a little strange. Initiate and make contact. This is very similar, you know, to NCAA's targeting rule that they're trying to do. They're going to use ejections. They're wondering whether they'll be subject to replay. Are ejections mandatory? I just think there's so many ways that the NFL can screw this one up. I really do. Like I said, we have to all understand, and we do all understand, we understand that they're trying to make it safer, eliminate concussions or reduce greatly the concussions. But this is just something I think that comes with the sport, comes with baseball and anything else. I know that it's more rampant in NFL. We're not stupid. We get it. But the point is that you still have to maintain some of, and I hate the integrity of the game, you know, statement, but you've got to still keep it football at the same time. And like I said, not penalize good tackles. We talked about the permission for the command center to eject the players. That's basically what they're wanting to do. They're wanting to have the right to, you know, get players that aren't seen by the referees and so on and so forth. We mentioned the permanent touchback now at the 25-yard line. It's permanent. They like that. Another new rule is no PTs at end of regulation. This happens so very randomly and just not that often. It's just kind of it's a rarity almost. It does happen occasionally, and it's never a big deal. But the biggest thing is, you know, after the 2017 playoff game with the Vikings and the Saints, that's kind of what they're doing with this. That's stupid. If it's a game like that, just forget it. The game's over. You know, let them go. It should never have been mandatory. It's not now. So that's the kind of the thing. But obviously, it doesn't mean that if you have a chance to win, you don't get to kick your extra point. This means if you've already guaranteed your win, there's no time on the clock, that you don't have to kick the extra point. It just makes, the game not worth ending twice, so to speak. One of the rules that was tabled was the hiring of head coaches who are in the playoffs. We're all famous, very familiar with this one, obviously, with, you know, McDaniels, everything that went down with that. I think this is this isn't just the simple thing. I've heard, you know, some of my buddies have opinions on this. A lot of you guys have opinions on this, and this is a tricky one because I get both sides of it totally. I mean, did I think McDaniels was a snake when it happened? Yes, just because he's a snake, not because that he didn't have the right to, you know, do this. But this is the problem you occasionally could run into. This happens with players. Frank Gore did it when he came to the Colts, was supposed to go to the Eagles. Okay. That kind of stuff. Once with the tampering period and then real free agency. So it's kind of the same type thing, you know, good coaches. If you want to say they get, you know, screwed over by this because they don't have a chance to really go out and test the market. If they want to be head coaches, they're more successful, so they get less time. But the teams such as the Colts with McDaniels, when they go to hire a guy, you never know what he's going to want. You never know what's going to happen with that organization at the end of the year. That's always a risk. It's inherent. And if I'm not mistaken, Ballard was one that spoke out against it and said he didn't want it because I actually agree with a lot of the people's complaints, a lot of the owners' complaints and everything. They tabled this one, like I said. But it would have – I mean, yeah, you can say it would prevent it, but – most of the people who are opposed to it say the rule change would be distracting for the coaches who are currently in the postseason. I get that. If the Colts are in the AFC Championship game, I don't want their defensive coordinator going out and taking interviews. I just don't. This has happened in the past. Even when it has nothing to do with the Colts, you see all these guys going out for their interviews, and you're just like, man, if I was on that team, I would not want him going out and doing that. I think that's great that he can find a job. That's not the point. It's not to keep them from finding a job. It's because you have a rooting interest in this team and you don't want to see anything screwed up. Nothing about the chemistry. People are crazy, you know, and I'm one of them. So it's all good with me. I think that you can't really do that. And I think that it benefits everybody involved. I really do in the end. And not only that, but I think that it actually worked to the Colts' benefit with McDaniels not coming. And with the Colts getting Reich, I mean, lots to be said about how successful the Colts are going to be under Reich. How successful would they have been under McDaniels? To me, that's not really the issue, especially not in the first year. The issue is that you have a guy that you think is going to lead and going to be able to inspire. I don't see McDaniels being the guy who can lead and inspire. I saw him as an excellent football mind for the offense of the Colts. Two completely different things. Both are sexy to me as far as who I want for the Colts coach, but I think the Colts lucked out with Reich, so I think that's another good one. Another table rule was video on the sidelines. This is for coaches. Instead of seeing, okay, you know, they used to have those big binders, and they're looking at different pictures of the possession before, and they're sitting on the sideline. You know, they go to tablets. Now they're seeing still photos on a tablet, and now it's transitioned to people wanting basically an all-22 being able to be there and watch the video. The people are arguing it, that our owners arguing it, that it would make it easier for teams who aren't as good or weren't prepared for the game to be able to be, you know, more within the game and basically get like fake good. You know, I don't know how else to explain it, but would give them an advantage to get back in the game where they normally wouldn't, you know. And I think that that's fine. I don't think that takes away from the game as well. If you're asking me, I just think it's too much. Let them figure it out, man. This is, you know, I don't know that one would necessarily help or hurt or anything else, but to me, this is kind of, you know, just dumb. I don't understand it. So they did withdraw the 15-yard penalty for pass interference that was brought forth basically. So instead of it being a spot foul, they bring it down to a 15-yard penalty. I'm glad they did that because, that, to me, that's too easy to be cheap with the defenders and everything else. I just didn't think that that was good for – I didn't think that would be good for the game. I didn't think that I would be interested in that. I don't think that I would have, you know, been excited to watch games that were, you know, done that way. I just don't think that would be good in general. I think that would be a bad rule change. So I'm glad that they tore that down and went forward with something else. So that's basically the new stuff with the rules, guys. You know, I hadn't, you know, really even looked at it really into it too much until maybe, you know, the other day. So I didn't know how, you know, up on it you guys were, but still, you know, we got to look at some of that stuff too, because that definitely affects everything that's going on. So we're going to take a quick 5-second break. We'll be right back. We're going to do our mock draft right after this. Welcome back to the Colts Cast, coffee time. All right. So let's jump into our mock draft here. Sitting for three rounds. The Colts are at 6 overall. I didn't get any trade proposals. Josh Rosen off number 1 to the Browns. Baker Mayfield, number 2 to the Giants. Josh Allen, 3 to the Jets. Connor Williams, offensive tackle, that's weird, to the Browns. I mean, I guess that's not totally weird. They need a tackle. So, I mean, then Sam Darnold, guys, to the Broncos. So 4 quarterbacks out of the 5 picks before ours. This is perfect, right? Just screw me over and make me make the bad decision here. But everybody's on the board. Barkley, Nelson, Chubb, Fitz, whoever you want. With everybody on the board, I'm going Bradley Chubb 110% of the time. I think that the Colts need that more than anything right now. I understand we all got to keep Luck upright. I get it. But there is a ton, and I mean a ton, of – and maybe and ton is a really piss-poor word, my bad. There are a good amount of solid interior offensive linemen that the Colts can get in later round. No, I agree. Nelson is pretty much head and shoulders above the rest of the guys. But you look at the running back position, you look at the guard position, there are options later who can be very successful with your team. You look at the edge rushers, I'm not so sure. There's some that I would love if you can get them in the second round, but you don't know who's going to go. So let's look at the picks that came after mine. Number 7, Nelson went. to the Bucks. Barkley went to the Bears. Tremaine Edmonds goes to the Niners. Derwin James to the Oakland Raiders. Roquan Smith, number 11, to the Dolphins. Not a lot of trades so far at all. Minkah Fitzpatrick to the Bills. Vita Vey, 13, to the Redskins. Denzel Ward, 14, to the Packers. Josh Jackson, 15, to the Cardinals. Cortland Sutton to the Ravens at 16. I don't see that. Mike McGlinchey, L.A. Chargers at 17. Isaiah Wynn to the Seahawks. That's good for them because they're in the middle of being ripped apart at the seams right now, that roster. Daron Payne went 19th to the Cowboys. Darius Geis, 20, to the Lions. Calvin Ridley, 21st to the Bengals. Harrison Phillips, 22nd to the Bills. Marcus Davenport goes to the Rams to the 23rd. That would be a good spot for him to land if you think about it. They could really use to develop him around some of the guys they got. He's not an immediate starter, but that would be a good spot for him to go, I think. Jair Alexander to the Panthers. Jesse Bates, safety, to the Tennessee Titans at 25. Isaiah Oliver, 26, to the Falcons. Harold Landry, 27, to the Saints. Lamar Jackson, 28th, to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mason Rudolph to the Jaguars. I actually think that might happen. At the 29 spot, Mike Hughes, 30th, to the Vikings. Rashawn Evans, all the way down to 31. I guess that surprises me a little bit, to the Patriots. Colton Miller gets inside the first round, 32, to the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think we did pretty good there. I think we're good. I like the thought of Bradley Chubb, you know, doing this. I think that he's the stud. I really do. If you're going at number one, I think I'm doing that every time. So everybody else is on the board. Let's see. Let's talk about kind of how they got it. The James Daniels here, I'm not going with him. He's a guard or a center guard combination. I think he's probably a center, but Colts might like some of these guys at guard. Probably not the worst thing in the world. Malik Jefferson, Sony Michel. This is quite a good possibility, in fact, and I've mocked it this way a few times, and I think that it's realistic. So I'm going to go ahead and hit this. And the best part about this for the Colts is you've got back-to-back picks here. There is no pressure on the Colts at number four in the second round right here. They can pick whoever the hell they want because they don't have anybody coming up behind them to take who, you know, the next best guy that they would like. I'm still taking it this way. So now you want to think what pick you were, how do you want to pay these guys possibly. You've got two guys in mind. My pick, you know, at this point is I'm going to probably, man, see, I'm confusing myself, but I'm going to pick up two on the line right here, and I'm going to take Will Hernandez. I'm going to take him a little higher than he would normally go because I've got the back-to-back pick. So I'm thinking kind of I want to get that guard. I'm not going to be paying him quite as much as I'm going to be paying my next guy, I don't think. So in their next – or, you know, for the first few years of their first contract. So I'm going Will Hernandez out of UTEP, the guard. I think that's smart to get that guy under in the house, right? You want to get that lineman. We got him. Now we got Bradley Chubb and an offensive lineman. Like I said, there's a bunch of guys to pick from here. I'm pretty much have made my mind up who I'm going with. Maurice Hurst is there. I'm taking him. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. I just think he's not the most athletic defensive lineman, but he is a different kind of lineman. And he may not be the guy that they would target because they want the fast and the athletic and everything, you know, up front in this 4-3. I still think you take him. You don't pass on that kind of talent, that kind of guy, because you don't really know what he can do in the NFL yet. And a guy that talented, you've got to take. So in that order, Bradley Chubb, Will Hernandez, and Maurice Hurst. I like that. I like that for my first three picks. Now, we've still got the round two, pick 17, coming up. I'll go ahead and get you guys squared away on who's been picked since round five, or the number five pick there. So let's look at these. I guess I'll have to go through. All right. James Daniels went right after Maurice Hurst to the Bucks. Ronnie Harrison to the Bears. Sony Michel to the Broncos. Malik Jefferson to the Raiders. Austin Corbett to the Dolphins. Arden Key to the Patriots. Man, they better hope that they can work wonders with that boy. Ronald Jones to the Redskins, Christian Kirk to the Green Bay Packers, Carlton Davis to the Bengals, cornerback, I like him. Jamarco Jones to the Cardinals, was high on him, not so high on him anymore. DJ Moore, wide receiver to the Chargers, that's a good pick for them. So here we are again. We're sitting up here. We've got Dallas Goedert, Hayden Hurst, cornerback Dante Jackson. I'm tempted to grab him while he's there. I'm kind of thinking, do I want to double up right now, or do I want to hit my running back? You know, maybe hit that a little high. I'm kind of trying to weigh everything. I think if I hit the running back spot here, I've got more of an opportunity to get the guy I want, but I'm going to be patient, right? Because I'm not patient ever. So I'm going to be patient. I'm going to wait on my running back, hopefully for the third round, try to get the guy, because I think that they're going to be sitting at the top of the board once we come around there. So I'm looking at tackle, cornerback right now, maybe safety, Kazir White out of West Virginia. I'm not so sure. I want to go safety. I don't think that's a pressing need for the Colts. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit up Tyrell Crosby from Oregon, offensive tackle, and I'm happy with that. Do we need a corner? Yeah, we need a corner, but I think there's still a bunch of guys that could be in that third, fourth round. We did get a trade opportunity. I didn't take it just because I wanted to be able to go through this kind of straight. So in our second round, we got Will Hernandez, guard out of UTEP, defensive lineman Maurice Hurst out of Michigan, Tyrell Crosby, offensive tackle out of Oregon. So I think that is a pretty good stop. Now, look, you guys aren't going to agree with me with going two offensive linemen in the second round. I get it. That's all right. I don't mind. It's a mock. Let's chill, okay? But as I predicted, there's some cornerbacks up here, running backs. Now I've kind of got my pick of the litter with a few guys. MJ Stewart's there from North Carolina. He's solid. I really like him. There's some other guys I like better. I'm not sure how this is ranked right here. But I don't necessarily see one that I'm, I think I'm going to probably go a different route here. And I've got my running backs on the board here that I can go from. Now, I've got a couple guys, Nick Chubb, Mark Walton, Rashad Penny, Hines, John Kelly, Royce Freeman. All those guys are on the board. I don't agree with a lot of the way that these are ranked, but I do agree that Rashad Penny is he's a guy I really, really like. But I am, at this point, probably as much as I could be about flipping a coin between he and Nick Chubb. Which one am I going to want? They're both sitting there. They're basically at the same value. We're in third round, pick three. I can get four positions of need, legit four positions of need, in the first three rounds. I'm going to take it. So I'm going to take a little bit of a chance here, and I'm going to go Nick Chubb, because I actually think, Rashad Penny might end up being the better pro, but I think right now Nick Chubb looks like the better prospect, and could be excellent. Don't get me wrong. But Rashad Penny and him just going back and forth together. So, in my head, those are the two guys that I definitely would love to see the Colts be able to get at round three. I don't know if that's going to happen, because we don't know how the board's going to fall, but look, Bradley Chubb, Will Hernandez, Maurice Hurst, Tyrell Crosby, and Nick Chubb. Edge, guard, D-line, offensive tackle, running back. I'm digging it. I mean, it's as good of a three-round draft, I think, as you could ask for. If Ballard gets this, I'm pretty stoked, guys. I mean, I'm not lying. I'm just kind of jumping around. Especially if they get, a couple of those guys. If Chubb's there, which it's getting kind of crazy, right? We don't actually know if he's going to be there or not. And a lot of people, including myself, we all pretty much assumed that it was going to be good to go. I thought that we were in good shape to where we were going to get Chubb. Now it looks like it could be a little dangerous for us out there. There could be Quentin Nelson. We could be trading back again a few steps just to get who wherever we're, create more draft picks and so on. So guys, that's all I got for you tonight. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Make sure you guys are subscribing to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Go out and rate and review the podcast. I appreciate you guys being able to share the show. I appreciate you guys watching, interacting with me. Not just me, but all of us. Stampede Blue is doing a lot of great things. I think we've really got a really cool team together. So another thing, the draft guide's coming out. There's a lot of places that do draft guides. I understand this is a little more centric around the Colts. I think what we think that these guys are going to bring, some of them we're not, but we're doing top 25 or so that we see prospects at each position. It's going to be interesting because I bought one to give away and I bought one for myself because I'm not seeing these other guys work. I've seen a little bit of it through the editing process and all that other stuff, but it's just, you know, I trust these guys to do good work. I'm excited to see what they've put into it. So if you guys want to get that, that'd be cool. Like I said, I'm going to give one away on the show. Hopefully that you guys are enjoying it. A lot of work going into it. And I know you guys will do it. You guys have already done a great job. We've already had an excellent turnout, so it's been really cool. Pretty kick-ass for you guys. I appreciate it. Basically, guys, that's all I got for you tonight. We had a nice, effective show. We got everything done that we needed to get done. We're going to have more shows. We're going to have a live show, get some call-ins going again. We haven't done that in a little while. That's on me. So we're going to do that here pretty soon as well. Thank you guys all for checking it out. I'll talk to you guys next time. Right here on the Colts Cast. AFC, white and blue, so pristine. Matt Carson like the color scheme. We talking AFC, emphasizing one team. In off season, see what it brings. One off season, closer to a ring. Like 07, trophy and rings. Matt Dainley hosting the Colts in this thing. Let's air it out. Fly route. Let's air it out.